birthday party?
Miracle. There you go.
Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast. I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. All right, Abracadamits, we had made it another week. It has been a good week. Overall, I don't know where you live, but where I live, the weather has been absolutely amazing. This fall has been beautiful too, because the leaves that have changed colors, they seem to be hanging around a little longer, which is really cool. I just got back from a show in the North Georgia mountains, and that was absolutely stunning. So if you get a chance, get out anywhere and just check out the leaves, the way everything looks right now. It's awesome, because you wish you would have come wintertime when everything's gray and cold and naked. So definitely that was awesome. Something I want to talk about real quick, man. I don't know, man. I guess I'm getting old. Because it seems like every year there's things that become popular that I just don't understand. I quit understanding. Like, I don't understand, what is the appeal to these island boys? Have you seen these guys? I don't even know what they're saying. I have no clue what's going on. They literally look like if the coronavirus were people. That's what they look like. I don't get it. There's a lot of things, like, you know, now I can add that to the list of music too. New music I've tried, but there's a lot of new music that I'm just like, this is straight garbage. I don't get it. All right, I'm getting off my old man box, kicking that aside. Let's get right on to this episode. Let's give a big shout out to the sponsors for today's episode. Okay. You ever get up in the middle of the night and you think you might see like a shadowy figure there in the corner of your bedroom, and then you get to look a little closer and you're like, does he have my underwear? But then you realize it's just that big pile of dirty laundry that's been piling up in your bedroom. That's right, folks. Today's episode is brought to you by Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services. Yes. Now, if you're anything like me, I hate doing laundry, and yes, dirty laundry can pile up. So don't hesitate to take your laundry to Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services, located at 122 Randolph Road, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Give Bob a call at 865-951-3237. Bob also offers a delivery service for anyone who's a senior citizen or homebound. Guys, doing your laundry has never been easier. All you have to do is take your big old pile of dirty clothes, drop it off, come back, and your clothes will be clean, dry, and folded and ready to go. Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services. Check them out today. All right, Abracadamits. Now, today's guest is somebody who I've known for a few years now. I've had the pleasure of hanging out with him at Zombie Fest and CreepyCon. Very talented guy, very creative dude. I own one of his books right now, Behind the Screams. It's about the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. I look forward to getting his other book that is out now, called Razor's Edge. So if you will, Abracadamits, sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with horror author Blake Best. All right, we got Blake Best, author of two amazing books right now. How you doing today, Blake?
I am well. How are you doing? You have been busy. I've been seeing all this stuff about you lately, traveling around. I'm a little bit jealous. You're hitting some areas I've not been to. So.
Oh my gosh, the driving is killing me, I'll tell you that. Well, let's do this, though. You know, like, we've known each other a few years. You know, I had the opportunity, I think the first time I met you, I don't know if it's at CreepyCon or Zombie Fest, but I know it's been a few years now. And if you don't mind, will you go ahead and let the listeners know about Blake Best?
Yes, I will. It's so weird hearing other people say my full name because Blake Best is just so, it almost seems like a stage name, but I assure everyone listening that is my given name. I did not have any choice in that. So you can blame my parents. Well, like you said, my name is Blake Best. I'm a horror author, a composer, a screenwriter. I used to be an actor. I used to be in a big touring metal band and living the rock and roll dream lifestyle and playing shows and doing all that. Well, I got a little older and decided I wanted to stick to studio work and kind of get off the road because being away on the road is kind of a soul-crushing experience. When you're on the road, like I was for 5 years straight, it is, very few and far between when you get days off. So I decided to limit my work to studio and film work as far as my music stuff goes. And then I spent the rest of my time, when I wasn't acting and writing for others and doing script doctoring, I decided to go ahead and take a chance and put some books out myself because it's something that I've always wanted to do. So.
Okay, now the book in particular, and this is, what you're known for, is from the movie Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, so, well, it's the weirdest story actually. So in 2016, the Freddy Krueger book that I'm known for, Razor's Edge, which was an origin novel on Freddy, that came out. It was published by a independent publishing company, and we didn't anticipate the kind of impact this book was going to have. I put the book out because it was like something that myself as a fan of films that I wanted to see. I've known Robert Englund for about almost 30 years, and we've crossed paths before multiple times doing these cons and doing these events and stuff. And it's something he talked about with me at length. It's something I always heard him talk about, and lots of fans talk about. Each movie, you get a little bit of Freddy's backstory, but you don't get anything in real detail. It's nothing that goes in depth, and I wanted to change that, so I kind of took some notes. A friend of mine, Andy Mangels, wrote the comic series Nightmares on Elm Street in 1992 for Innovation, right before they closed their doors. And I spoke with him and said, "Hey, I've got this idea. What do you think about it?" And he said, "I think it's a great idea. And actually, I've got some names here." So the names that he sent me were the names of the 20 victims. Now, if you watch the Freddy Krueger films, the Nightmare on Elm Street films, you always hear about these 20 kids that he killed, which is what he went to jail for. But then he got out on a technicality. They didn't sign the search warrant in the right place. They performed an illegal search and seizure on his workplace where they found evidence, including that glove, one of which I have back here. So they found this.
Oh, super cool. You got the glove.
Yeah, they found that at his workplace, and it was stained with blood. They found little children's toys and hair ribbons and stuff. So everything they needed was there, but they didn't get a search warrant first. They obtained it all legally. And Judge Francesca, who was one of the, actually, she's one of the first African American judges in Springwood, Ohio. She presided over the case, and she had no choice but to dismiss the case because the evidence was obtained illegally. She even says, if proper procedure had been followed, this couldn't have happened. But this stuff was obtained illegally, so it's inadmissible in the court of law. So Freddy Krueger got away with it. They let him go, but it didn't end there. The parents got, I don't know what the language is here. Do we have a
Oh,
language
no, you can
barrier?
say whatever you want to, brother. You're free to say
Okay,
whatever
well,
you want.
the parents got kind of pissed off. And most of them had kids that were victims of Freddie. So they said, "To hell with this. We're going to take the law into our own hands." They cornered him in his boiler room. And with the help of police, Lieutenant Donald Thompson, who his daughter Nancy from the films, and Lieutenant Tim Blocker, they led a mob against Freddie. And Donald Thompson was about to just let it go until Freddie says, "You better hope I don't get out of here. Because if I do, your little Nancy is going to be next." And that was enough. He took the gasoline can from his wife. He beat the shit out of Freddy Krueger along with the rest of the parents. He poured the gasoline on him, made a trail of it out the door, and then lit the whole thing up and watched it burn while he was inside of it. And then he called it in as an arson. And basically, he said, "No one speaks of this ever again. This is going to be our secret." So essentially, their dark little secret is they became what they hated the most. They became murderers. And in this case, they killed Freddy, but if you've seen the films, it doesn't end there. So I wanted to tell that story. We know what happened after he died and became the dream demon, the monster, the ghost. He was, you know, with the disfigured face and the claws and all that. He was a monster. We know all that, but what we didn't know is what led up to that. So I chronicle all of it from birth, up through his adoption by Underwood at age 8, up through his meeting his mother again as a young man in his 20s, up to his marriage, his daughter's birth, and then murders from 1966 to 1971. So that's what that book chronicles. And I put all that out. And then I got inducted into the Hall of Fame. I had no idea, but the Nightmare on Elm Street 4 casting crew, the ones that were in attendance there, they all knew. They knew that I was going to be inducted. I had no idea it was my first con. So I go there and all of a sudden they're like, oh, we're inducting you into the Hall of Fame. And I was like, okay. I didn't really know what it meant at the time because, you know, these you're new, you're in culture shock here. You're out looking around. I was in Vegas. I'd never been. It's Sin City. And let me tell you, did I see some things when I got off that plane that certainly were sinful. but they inducted me and a man came up to my table right after the induction. I'm still on cloud nine here signing books. He put his hand out and said, hi. I said, hi, you know, and he said, I want to let you know, I read your book and I loved it. And I think what you're doing for the films is great, you know, telling this backstory. And hopefully we get to do this again sometime soon. And I felt really bad. He was about to walk away. I said, here, take a copy on me, you know, just you take one. Thank you for stopping by. And by the way, I didn't get your name. He said, my name is Ron Chaney. I said, Ron Chaney, as in Lon Chaney, Ron Chaney? He said, yes. I said, so you're the great-great-grandson of Lon Chaney. He said, I am. And then I was like, wow, I grew up watching your family on television and movies. I loved it. He said, you know, I hear it a lot. And I never get tired of hearing it. Thank you for doing what you do. And I hope that in some way, maybe seeing some of that stuff kind of inspired you to do what you do, because I'm a big fan and I love it. I was like, I never thought that you don't... That doesn't happen, okay? Ron Chaney doesn't tell you. That's as good as Boris Karloff telling you he's a fan.
Well, here, hold on, Blake. Hold on. Let me back this up real quick, because just in case for the listeners may not know who you're talking about, kind of introduce this. You said is Ron Chaney is what you said?
Ron Chaney, yes. He
okay,
is
let them know who that is.
Yeah, he is the great-grandson of Lon Chaney. Lon Chaney starred in Phantom of the Opera in 1925. He was in The Hunchback of Notre Dame. He was in The Mummy. He was in all these other films. The Wolf Man, that was Lon Chaney Jr. That was his son. He was the Wolf Man. And then it goes on and on. That's like a legacy of horror in that family. It's almost like Vincent Price.
Where, wow, yeah.
You know, and I just didn't expect it. So we went and I had a couple drinks. Couple Jack and Cokes, you know, Nightmare casting crew bought some for me. And I was like, hey, cool. We're going to party. Awesome. You know, and then he was there again and they called us all up to sign a bunch of different stuff. And I got to sign a bunch of cast signed posters. And then I said, hey, you mind getting a picture with me? He said, not only do I want to get a picture with you, we need to go out for drinks some more. So I was like, okay. on my Facebook, there's a picture with me and Ron Chaney. And then somewhere out there, somebody's got a picture of me wandering Vegas Strip. I am a little bit inebriated, a little, just to take the edge off. But I'm wandering the strip with one of these Freddy gloves on. Okay, you know I've got a lot of those, and these are all real. So I'm wandering the strip out there with this, and I'm actually out there with Mick Strawn, who was Nightmare on Elm Street 3 and 4. He was the production designer. So we're out there searching for food. At, you know, midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning after being inducted into the Hall of Fame. So it's a hell of a story, that's for sure.
Okay, well, see, this is a lot of questions here, man. A lot of questions. First of all, I love the fact the way you just went straight Geekville on the backstory of Freddy Krueger. I absolutely love that. I love that. And I've always thought, you know, like, there's a whole new series of movies before Freddy, but got, you know, before he died, you know, there's a lot of things they could do there. But let me ask you this, because what got you involved with Nightmare on Elm Street? What got your obsession there with it?
Well, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a sad story, but growing up, I'm a product of a broken home, as I'm sure a lot of people are. My mother married a drunken alcoholic, abusive drug addict, and that sort of was my home life. So in order to get rid of that, I kind of lost myself in books and films, because for that, 90 minutes, whatever the movie length is, they're 90 minutes. You're not thinking about what you're going through. You're completely, if the movie is good, you're completely focused on what's going on in front of you. The rest of it be damned. You're not really studying what's going on in your life. For those 90 minutes, you were vicariously living through someone else's eyes. So I kind of got lost in that. I found Nightmare on Elm Street playing on television. I was about 7, way too young to see it, but I was intrigued. And it was the sequence when Freddy's coming down the alleyway and he has these long arms that are stretched out from building to building. And then the girl says, Tina, she says, please, God. And he says, this is God. And you see the light hit that glove and the razor blades just gleam. And I thought, wow, that is one heck of a way to do a movie, And I just kind of got lost in it there. And I wrote a lot on my own diary entries, talking about what I was going through at home, when I was not watching movies. And I decided one day, maybe I could do something with this. Maybe I could take what's happened to me and, though it be something negative, make something positive out of it, And then I wrote and got published as a kid. I did an essay on the Loch Ness Monster and cryptozoology in modern age. I was about 9 or 10 at the time. That was sort of how that whole obsession started with monsters, and cryptozoology and stuff. So I got that done. Then I quit writing and started playing guitar for a little while. And then I got signed to a record deal and I completely forgot about the writing and went on tour. Toured around the country. I was a studio session guitar player. I've played thousands of shows. I played with Five Finger Death Punch, Asking Alexandria, lots of those groups like that. I was always playing metal. And of course I grew up loving stuff like Dokken and Van Halen and Boston and Alice in Chains. Nirvana was a big reason that I played. And, that's what I did for 5 years. And then I retired, and then I came out of retirement and tried it again. And I was like, I'm not going to do this again. I'm too old. I was in my late 20s at the time. And by that time I'd already retired. By the time I was 30, I had 3 songs that were hits on the radio. And I figured, hey, that's good enough. I'm not going to push it for a 4th song, So I stopped doing the touring around and started just working from home.
Well, that's pretty awesome, dude. I mean, first of all, I think a lot of creative people, there's something that they experienced in childhood, and a lot of them turn to creativity to deal with that, to cope with those situations. And with you, it seems like, this is something that you've kind of transformed into your superpower. You know what I mean? You totally, like I said, you explained the prequel to Nightmare on Elm Street like it was, real. Is the way you were explaining it, and it was just amazing. It sounded great, but as far as the movie, so when you played music, did you come back and do any, is that where you came back to the writing after doing music?
Yeah, after I retired from touring around and everything, I settled down, had a family, and met my lovely wife. And I didn't know at the time, but she was going to change my life, and she actually has been instrumental in, me keeping up with this hectic schedule I have. She helps manage my career and stuff. And she actually just did a great little blurb on the back of my book, a new synopsis. She came up with almost all of it. And she's a gifted writer herself. And she's really creative. So it's like I found the perfect partner to be that creative force with, and you've met Lisa quite a few times,
yeah, I believe. Yeah.
And she helps me get these things organized. She always sets up the booth. So whenever you come to see the table and it's this kick-ass design with all these great colors and everything set up so perfectly, that's on her. I have no sense of design. I'm like, here's the books. I'm going to sit them on the table. Hey, here's a book. And she's like, no, you got to place it like this and use the claws to kind of accent it. It's like this whole formula she has, and it does like gangbusters every time.
Yeah, my table always, if I set anything up,
No.
it looks like hell. So Antoinette has to be the one to make it look nice. Well, let's do this. All right, now there's a connection. You mentioned the cast from Nightmare on Elm Street 4, correct? So
Yeah.
you were involved with them, correct?
I was, yes.
So tell us about that and your experience there with that film.
Well, for that film, it actually started out as a joke. It was a drunken exchange between Mick Strong and myself, Nick Benson, who was special effects on Nightmare 4. He was there at the table. And Mick had had a couple of drinks. I'd had a couple of drinks. We were just trying to relax and celebrating, still kind of on cloud nine about this whole, induction thing. And he said, "You know what somebody ought to do? Somebody ought to write a book about Nightmare 4 because that film was a nightmare to make." And I mean that without being funny. There's so much that happened on the set of that film. There were people that lost their jobs. There were people that almost lost their lives. There was a strike going on. We almost didn't get the damn thing made. So
Wow.
I thought, well, okay. And I kind of brushed it off because I knew that the history already. I mean, the friends that I've made and I've been lucky enough to make in the business that worked on those films oftentimes would share things with me, while we were visiting or doing these cons together or whatever. And I'd get to hear these stories and stuff. And then, I got it occurred to me, I was like, I guess that would be a good idea. So I kind of laughed it off. And enter Mick Strawn about a year and a half later. I had just finished publishing Razor's Edge and was kind of taking a break. And he calls me up at almost midnight. So I'm in bed and all of a sudden my phone starts ringing. And my first instinct is, shit, my wife's asleep. If this thing gets too loud, it's going to wake her up. And I don't want to do that. Not because of anything other than just, I know she works hard just like I do and she needs a rest. So I grab the phone up off the floor and I'm like, whoa. And he's like, Blake. And of course, Mick is loud. He has no volume control whatsoever at all. He would be the one to tell you that too. I'm not telling you anything he hasn't said. He said, what do you think about doing this book on Nightmare 4? I was like, right now? Are you serious? He's like, yeah. Why not? I was like, okay, without really thinking about it, I just said yes. Mostly because I wanted to get him off the phone because but I said yes, and then for the next 7 months, the life as I knew it was turned upside down. I kept psychotic hours. We're talking 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. I was making phone calls to Scotland, where cast members were living. I was making phone calls to LA. Was talking to Robert Englund, talking to Bob Shea, talking to Nick Benson, Steve Johnson, Bill Forsh, Mick himself, Screaming Mad George. I mean, you name it. We talked to anyone and everyone, of everyone from special effects to craft services and everyone in between. And they all told us these incredible stories, but more than that, they had pictures that they had never shown anyone from their times on the films. And we went through something like, I want to say 10,000 photos over the course of 7 months. And it was all stuff. I mean, we're talking, this is shit that nobody's ever seen before, right? Like the making of how these effects were done. There's slime and methyl cellulose, the cockroach sequence, and then the arm elbow breaks, the waterbed. And I thought, wow, we need to put some of these pictures in here to go along with the story so that those people that want to put an image to what they're reading can have the chance to do that. So it took us 7 months and hours and hours. And like I said, I kept psychotic hours. I'm surprised my wife dealt with me, really, because I was getting up at starting at, at 9 o'clock or 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning and working until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning on these interviews and everything. And finally, the book was finished. And that one was my first nonfiction that I wrote with someone. It was the first book I ever co-authored with anybody. That one's called Behind the Screams, which you did stop by and see. I think you got a copy
I
of
actually
that.
have that book. Yeah, that's a really cool book because there's a lot of cool stuff inside that book. Yeah, I was looking at it and I was just like, oh man, this is, and I love the behind the scenes, the TV magic of, I love that stuff. So I was like,
Yeah.
this is really, really freaking cool. Now, well, let me, okay, that was part four. Let me go ahead and just ask you this, all right? Because I had just watched Nightmare on Elm Street around Halloween. They're showing everything. And I God, let me just say this. It was one part in that movie that I had never realized before, and it made me sick. And it wasn't anything to do with any of the horror part. It's a part when Nancy looks in the mirror and she goes, from where she hasn't had any sleep, and she goes, "My God, I look like a 20-year-old. You know. I was like, okay, Nancy, you can die now. I remember this the other day. I watched the first one. I watched part two with Jesse. Let me ask you this real quick, because especially if anybody listens, if you guys listening are Nightmare on Elm Street fans, then you'll have this question too. I don't know, but Blake is the man to ask this question. Okay, at the end of part two, the way part two ends, Freddy basically drives the bus off out into the wherever, a desert, wherever. Does Jesse die? Or is that a dream? We don't even get an answer really about that. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the beauty of that. You know,
you're right. There is some beauty in that, though. You're right. There is beauty in that.
Mark Patton actually, years ago, came out with a book called Jesse's Lost Journals, where he continues the story on. So apparently the character survived. I always thought it was a dream simply because it ended the way the film started. If you remember when the film started, Jesse's on the bus and Robert Englund is driving.
Yeah.
You know, he's the driver. And then slowly, by the time they make it to the end of the block, he has become Freddy and they're driving out of this desert, and then lightning strikes, the ground splits open, and there's just the two girls and him on the bus with Freddy. So it ended the way that it started. So it starts with a dream sequence. Logically, to me, it makes sense that it would end with a dream sequence, because Freddy's in your nightmares, though Nightmare on Elm Street 2 is the only one where he comes out. He uses Jesse as a puppet. He basically possesses him. So that's the only film in the series that broke Wes's tried and true formula, because at that time when part two came out, it wasn't a series of films yet, which Halloween 3 gets a lot of flack for that too, because it's not technically supposed to be about Michael Myers. They didn't know what they had at the time. They were going to go a different route until, you know, they got reviews otherwise and thought it over. So I think he lived. Obviously, I think he lived, but he was scarred because, I mean, he murdered his gym teacher. He murdered his best friend. He couldn't seal the deal with the girl. He tried to kill his sister. Things just didn't go well for the Walsh boy at all.
Not at all, man. Well, so which one is your... Which film is your favorite film?
You can't ask me that question. Because I like them all for varying different reasons.
Okay.
I will say Nightmare 1 turned me on to the character of Fred.
Gotcha.
Were it not for that late night viewing when I wasn't supposed to be watching it, I wouldn't be sitting here today with talking about it.
So. We got to be, Blake, me and you got to be close to the same age, because I was a little kid too when Freddie was, I was a child in the 80s, which in my opinion is the best time to be a child. I'm sorry, to be a kid, the 80s was the best.
I'm probably a lot younger than you think I am. I'm only 36.
Well, okay, well, you are younger than me, but, I mean, I'm not saying you look old either. I mean, you know.
I am.
No, I mean, you know, I remember watching, you know, the Nightmare on Elm Street as a kid in the 80s, and it would literally scare the total hell out of me, because there was something different about Freddy from the other guys. You know, it's like you can run from the other guys. Well, not really, but you stood at least a chance of getting away. But with Freddy, he would get you in your dreams. And
yeah, you can walk fast from the other guys, but then by the time you get where you're going, Michael Myers has already made a sandwich and he's composing a sonnet and he's just like waiting on you, know.
Yeah. Same thing with Jason, you know. But Freddy, there was just something about it. But let's also mention this, because this is something that I wonder about, is we've seen them try to reboot Nightmare on Elm Street, which I hated, by the way. I hated the reboot, didn't like it. The reason why, I mean, first of all, I'm not a fan of reboots, period. Now, I am going to exclude the Halloween movies that are happening right now. I don't even really know if I'd call them a reboot. I just think they're someone else's version. You know, I mean, I guess that's what a reboot is. But excluding the Halloween movies right now, which I do like what they're doing with the Halloween movies now. But for Nightmare on Elm Street, they try to do this reboot. And I'm sorry, man. First of all, if it's not Robert Englund, it's not Freddy. And it never will be. You know, you would have to get somebody who favors Robert Englund so much to be able to pull this off. Or not unless they do one of these deep fake faces technology crap that they can do these days, you know, and put Robert Englund's face on something, you know.
You know, you sound like so many fans that I've talked to, and that's fine. Everybody, I mean, Robert Englund made that role. I mean, he lived vicariously through that role and he has relished it. Every role since then, there's always a little, you know, Freddy, no matter what it is he's playing. But, you know, as far as people taking over, I was talking to the wife and I actually told her we both like Doug Jones.
Doug Jones.
In Shape of Water. He was the fish man. He was Abe Sapien and Hellboy. And in Hocus Pocus, he was I forget the guy's name. The
one. Yeah. That they I know who you're talking. Yeah.
Yeah. He could do it. He's thin, kind of lanky, and he always plays these monsters and he's incredible. I would think that a film with him in it as Freddy would be awesome because he's just so versatile, you know, really.
Now there is, I will say this real quick, Blake. There is a fan film out there called, I want to say it's just called Krueger, is what I think it's called. And there's a guy that plays Freddy Krueger before he was burned. You know, it's just a quick little clip. And he favors a young Robert Englund somewhat. I don't know what his name is. Are you familiar with the film that I'm talking about?
Yeah, his name is Roberto Lombardi. Yeah, those are Chris Notarile's films. I'm familiar with.
So I've seen, you know, that guy, and I thought, well, you know, that looks like kind of a, you know, a Robert Englund, you know, type. You know, he could play that part. But I don't know. Then again, though, to me also, I mean, when I look back at all movies, there's certain people that'll just always be like Christopher Reeves will always be Superman. There'll never be another Superman better than Christopher Reeves. You know what I mean? So it's just maybe I'm married to my youth, Blake. So I can't.
It's okay. I mean, that's what you I always said that Michael Keaton was my favorite Batman.
Well, you know what? Michael Keaton, I will say this, and I'll argue with anybody with this. Michael Keaton was the best Bruce Wayne. I don't think there will ever be a better Bruce Wayne than Michael Keaton. Because Michael Keaton was able to pull off that. Because Bruce Wayne, people forget, you know, they always portray Bruce Wayne as being this sexy, you know, billionaire. But he's also a little crazy caca too, you know what I mean? And Michael Keaton could pull that off, you know. He was able to pull that off a little bit, give you a little taste of the crazy a little bit. So
you have to be crazy to jump from rooftop to rooftop in a black leather suit with a 30-pound cape.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, but I mean, now this new Batman film, though, is getting a lot of hype. A lot of people are talking about it. So, I don't know. I mean, hell, I'll watch it. But, well, let's get this. Let's get back to Nightmare on Elm Street. So, do you know anything? Any future? Anything for Nightmare films?
I don't. You know, as it stands, as sad as it is, there's not been anything on the horizon for Nightmare on Elm Street. Now, you know, Nightmare sort of made New Line Cinema. When New Line Cinema started, it was a flagship company that was basically run out of a trunk of a car. And then after it was all said and done, Freddy Krueger and Nightmare on Elm Street made New Line about $700 million all told. Wow. So that sort of opened the doors to them having these other properties like Harry Potter, like The Rings, you know, The Conjuring, which they are still doing horror, but most of it is this possession horror or like these ghosts.
There's no slashers, not a lot of slasher guys anymore.
No, there's not. But it's so funny, though, because it's Freddy has made New Line and everybody calls it that New Line is the house that Freddy built. And it's funny because Mick Strom was actually in a meeting with Sarah Risher. He was working on some effect sequences for another project. And Sarah and Rachel were having this talk with Bob Shea, who was the CEO and head of New Line at the time, about whether or not to take a chance on putting the money forward for this movie that they were trying to do. And he said, I don't know. You know, I really don't know. So he said, Sarah, Rachel, what do you think? He said, I don't really see how the hell does a mutant ninja turtle, how is that going to have any kind of like a, like any kind of staying power? They said, trust me, it'll work. Put your money down for it. It'll work. And I'm glad that they did, because another franchise was spawned out of that, you know?
So. That's crazy. And okay. And I mean, I would love to see something, you know, it continue to live, kind of like what they're doing with Halloween. But at the same time, you don't have to reboot. You don't have to, you know, you don't, just because something's old doesn't mean it needs to be remade. You know what I mean? There's a lot of old films out there.
That's true. But the reason they do that is, yeah. I mean, the reason they do that is they want to keep it fresh for a newer generation. And I mean, I haven't shared this with a lot of people, but there's actually been a lot of talk with some filmmaker friends of mine that really want to take Razor's Edge and make it into a film. And one of them said, if they would have filmed your book in 2010 instead of that movie that they filmed, there may have been a history and a future for Freddy to continue on, you know, in further generations, which I thought was very flattering. I mean, I take no credit. I don't own those characters. Wes Craven and company own all that. I kind of just took something great that was already there and expounded upon it and brought it out and made it more detailed instead of a microcosm of a universe. Now it's a macrocosm, you know? So.
Well, no, I think that's super cool. So basically Razor's Edge is a prequel to the Nightmare on Elm Street film, correct?
Right. And I didn't think about it like that until I got someone who was, he worked with, he worked with Clive Barker on something that he had been working on. And Clive Barker is another incredible writer. Like I said, I'm the writers out there right now that are doing horror, especially all the new ones. My wife has turned me on to some newer ones, Nick Cutter and Paul Tremblay and a lot of these others out here that are doing great work. So it's like I'm trying to keep my ears and eyes out for the new books that are coming out. But he worked with Clive Barker, and he said he actually read the book. And I said, okay. And I'm sitting there thinking, all right, where's the axe? Where's the axe that's going to come down my throat here? He said, no, you're not going to believe this. I read the book, and then I watched the first Nightmare on Elm Street film. I said, okay. And he said, well, it felt like to me at no point when I went from reading your book to watching the movie did I feel like anything was left out. As a matter of fact, when I started the film, I felt like I had a deeper, more rooted understanding of the events surrounding the films, what made Freddy what he was, and also what perpetuated the actions taken by the other characters. It felt like to me that it was supposed to be there.
That is awesome, man. I want to read this book. I cannot wait to read this book because I love that kind of stuff. I love, you know, the backstories. That was one of the things, like, you know, a lot of people give Rob Zombie's Halloween shit all the time. But the thing I loved about that is that he gives you the backstory of Michael Myers. You know, you get to see Michael as a child, you know. So I love backstories. I can't wait to read your book. Now, you mentioned you know Robert Englund. You spoke to Robert several times. What is Robert like? Tell us something about Robert Englund.
He's short when compared to me.
Well, I'm short. All right. Yes. Go short, yes, guys.
He's short, and boy, does he love his cowboy boots. Last time I saw him, he's wearing cowboy boots, very nice ones, with jeans and a sports coat. Kind of just hanging out. And he actually, the last time I saw him, he got his claws stuck in my wife's shirt. And I've never seen Robert Englund red-faced before. I mean, I joked with her. I said, and with him, I said, Robert, it's really fine. I would happily sacrifice my wife to you. It would be fine. But no, he's a really sweet guy. And he's so nice, and he gives everybody the time of day. He remembers names. He remembers faces. He loves meeting his fans. So, you know, and it's something. When I walked up to him the last time, he said, it's about damn time. And I said, what's that? He said, I was wondering when I was going to see you at one of these things, when you were going to start doing them. I said, well, you know how that is. He said, come here. I said, okay. So I came over to him, and he took the claw that I had with me off, signed it, put it on, put it right up to my throat, right here. And I thought for the split second, I told my wife, I said, if I sneeze or he coughs, one of us is going to the morgue. So, you know, I don't know which one it's going to be, but he signed it, he wore it, and then he gave me a hug, and he just said, I'm glad to see you here, and I love what you're doing, and next time I'm in town, we should get a burger. I was like, okay. Because when Freddy Krueger wants to go have a burger, you go have a burger.
You go have a burger with Freddy. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, without question. And my wife was up there with me, and for whatever reason, the security grabbed her and tried to cart her off because they thought she was, I guess, some fan that was not he and Lisa Wilcox and everybody else that was up there was like, you can put her down. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. And then she's outside while I'm in there with Robert at the panel. And I come out and there was a man sitting next to her. She was studying for a final or something at the time. And she had no idea who she was talking to. She never looked up. She was studying. I said, do you know who that was you were just talking to? She said, no, I didn't look up at him. I said, that's Edward James Olmos.
Oh, cool.
Oscar nominated and winning actor. I mean, that's Adama. What did he talk to you about? She said, oh, he talked to me about what I was studying and stuff. And she is so laid back around all these people. She has met so many celebrities and done so many of these things. And she is very laid back. And one of the ways she shows love is like baking cookies and bringing things. And the last time I saw Nick Nick Strong, you know, and Nick Vincent, she was like, next time I'm going to bring y'all cookies because I don't think they fed y'all here.
Dude, well, that's super cool, man. I would love to meet Robert Englund. I would love to meet him. You know, like I said, he's a little different from any of the other slasher guys is because, you know, he is Freddy. You know, it's just he is Freddy. You know, this is something I was thinking about, man. What something we have not really truly seen is I would love to see the slasher style movies come back full fledged like they were in the 80s and the 90s. But what about a female slasher? How cool would that be?
There are already so many female slashers out there. Are you kidding me?
Who? Name one.
Well, I want to say Jennifer Hills from I Spit on Your Grave.
Well, I mean, this is the other thing, Blake. Okay. Now that was a crazy movie. Absolutely. I Spit on Your Grave. But I mean, I'm talking about like when you name the top five slashers, you know, what you got, Jason, you got Michael, you got Freddy, you got Chucky. And I mean, maybe Candyman, I guess now it would be number five. Now not everybody though is a horror guru like you. Okay. So if we need somebody that everybody may recognize, you know what I mean? Like that has like a franchise of films, I think that would be amazing.
Well, my wife who is in the back here, she just brought up Carrie.
Carrie would be amazing. I would love to see. And now, first of all, that's another one like on the reboot. I'm sorry, I didn't watch the reboot. I refused to watch it. Sissy Spacek will always be Carrie, no one else. But that would be great. I'd love to see Carrie. I'd like to see it like if they casted it right and maybe did like a franchise series of films, I think that would be pretty dope.
I guess everybody forgets about The Rage Carrie too, don't they?
I never saw it.
Well, yeah, I don't suppose my wife's response to that was, ugh. So I guess you're not technically missing out on anything. But don't forget about Angela.
Angela.
Sleepaway Camp. Oh, very much a slasher.
That was enough. That is very much a slasher. That is very much. Gosh, that's throwback too, man. Did they do like a reboot with Sleepaway Camp?
They did a newer one with her, and I'm actually going to be appearing alongside her up there at FrankenCon with Joe Bob Briggs in May. Oh, and not
super cool.
There, you got to stop by and see her, man.
And you said in May?
Yeah, it's in May of 2022. I know, I've booked out in the future. All I need is a DeLorean, you know?
Yeah, I hear you, bro. Trust me. Where'd you say it was going to be at?
It's going to be at the Hilton in Knoxville. There's a Hilton hotel there. There's a whole Facebook page and all that about it.
Absolutely. So there's a con going on there.
Yeah, it's a Saturday, one day. It's a one-day event from 9 to 6, but she will be there. Tom Matthews is going to be there. You saw Jason Lives.
Oh, yes. I'm a big fan of Jason Lives.
Yeah, he's going to be there.
I may have to go to that, dude. If I'm in town, I'm going to have to go to that because that sounds – first of all, I'm a big Friday 13th fan, real big Friday 13th, and Jason Lives is probably my favorite Friday 13th movie. I would definitely love to check that out. Well, since we're on the topic of cons and doing stuff, one thing that we always do here on the Abracadam podcast, Blake Best, is we ask our guests to tell a hell gig story. We need a hell gig story here, man. Let's hear one.
Okay, you put me on the spot. All right, so CreepyCon 2021.
Ah, yes! I remember that one.
That was back. Yeah, that was back in August. And you know, I still haven't forgiven you for giving me the slip up on that. You didn't stop by and visit me at all. So what's up with that?
I can't, but I did. I don't know. I was in and out so much. I didn't get to get much time to get around there. But I hate that. Yes. Well, we'll have to catch up in May.
Said he was busy. I'm like, quit covering for him.
We will catch up in May. I'm going to be there in May.
All right. Well, so I'm at the table and. As you know, because you've seen my table, I have lots of movie props, stuff from Nightmare 1, Nightmare 4.
Got a lot of cool stuff.
The gloves. Yeah, it's lots of really cool stuff. Well, there was a guy, I don't know who he was, he came over while my dad was there. I was out, I think I went to go get a drink and came back, and he had been by the table a couple times. Well, he kept coming up and asking about the gloves and wanting to pick one of them up. And my dad, who was watching the table, was like, oh, probably you might want to wait till Blake gets back and then he'll tell you anything you want to know about them. He kept asking if they were for sale. And he came back 3 or 4 times. And finally, I had a guy come by who worked at one of the haunts. He was dressed as like a Quaker. Okay. And he had an axe. And then there was a clown there called Pumpkin the Clown. Both of these guys in full makeup and costume were back there behind my table. Well, this guy came through and both of them jumped out from behind the table. And then he looked at me like he was about to piss himself and he went out the other door. I didn't see him any of the rest of the time. So I told them, thank you for that. You know, they said, well, we've been up and down here quite a lot and we saw him and he looked like he might not be up to, you know, exactly, you know, good things, which that kind of thing happens sometimes, but it was a real chance that somebody could have made off with one of my prized possessions. And that would have been
that would have super sucked too, man. That would have been, I mean, but I just wonder, you know, was he going to like run down the hall with the glove or.
I don't know. If he would have had the glove, I would have totally told him no running in the hallway. Just like the girl said.
Yeah. I love that, dude. I love the way that you are. The authority on Nightmare on Elm Street, bro. You are the man.
I'm sure there's somebody out there that knows more than me. I'm positive.
Oh, I don't know. I do not know that. Well, let's do this real quick. Speaking of knowing, we're going to try something here, okay?
Okay.
Blake Best, you, sir, do you believe in mind reading?
Well, yeah, I do.
All right, well, we're going to try to do some mind reading. What I want you to do, I want you to think of a car. You got it? Just think of it. You got it?
Got it.
All right, cool. Okay. I'm going to try to do this. I got a deck of cards here. I'm going to try to cut the deck here. Give it a cut. I'm going to cut right here, Blake. I'm obligated, brother. I can't change my mind. I'm going to cut right here. Now, for the first time, what was the card you were thinking of?
Am I supposed to tell you?
Name it out loud. The card. Say it, baby.
I think it was the Jack of Spades, I believe.
The Jack of Spades. Well, wait a minute. The Jack of Spades, or was it the Jack of Clubs?
Jack of Clubs. That was it. Well, shit.
Thank you. They can't see us. You got to clap or say yay or something, Blake.
Hooray! All right.
Mind reading. You've been abracadam, sir. Yes, you've been abracadam. Not as cool as Freddie, but almost. Almost. So let's do this real quick. Let's talk about Razor's Edge, because that's the new book that is just recently came out, correct?
That is.
Yes. And now this is the prequel to Nightmare on Elm Street. So how do you, talk about the 20 people that Freddy killed? Does it, how deep does it go into Freddy?
Very.
Without giving too much away. I don't want to give too much away on the book or anything, but so people who read this book will get like a very in-depth, you know, storyline on Freddy Krueger.
You get such an in-depth story that you probably, once you read it, are going to wish that you didn't exactly know everything about the circumstances surrounding him, specifically his birth.
Oh man, wow. I really can't wait to check this out. Well, I tell you what, before we get out of here, Blake, where can the listeners learn more about you? Where can they buy this book? Where can they buy your other book? Let them know.
Well, I've got social media, you know, I'm all over that. So I've got Facebook. I always take orders through Facebook. So it's facebook.com/BlakeBestHorror. That's my public figure page. I've got a personal one, and believe it or not, I've got a lot of people on there too. So basically, if you search Blake Best, I'm going to be the only 6'4" Korean with a mustache you're going to see. So it's probably the right one. I've got a website. I do have an actual website. It's very long. I almost don't want to read it, but it's blakebestauthor.wixsite.com. And then you /BlakeBestHorror, and that'll take you right to the website, and you can get the books there. They're actually there where you can order each of them. I've got them for US and international. I do international ones as well. I've got Instagram, that's Blake Best Official. And then I do have a Twitter, I just don't ever use the damn thing. That's at BlakeBest 1428, because what better place than 1428 Elm Street? All right.
Oh, there we go. Once again, the authority. He is everything on Nightmare on Elm Street. One more question I forgot to ask you, Blake. Yeah, got to put the glove on, brother. Put the glove on. He is wearing the glove, folks, and this is the real damn deal, right? This is the...
This one was made by Flaming Creations. This is Josh Clark. I actually just got this one. This was a birthday present from my wife. Doesn't she know?
That is crazy, dude. I would hate to be... If somebody breaks into your house, they're screwed. They're going to piss their pants. But let me ask you this. I meant to ask you this too, real quick, before we get out of here. I gotta know, what is your take on Freddy versus Jason?
I think that it was well worth the price of admission, and it's one I've watched multiple times. It's good fun. Freddy's at his best with the comedy. He's at his best with the gallows humor. The effects, it was the early attempts at blending some of the CGI in, and I think they did such a good job with it that it'd be very difficult for anyone to be able to really tell what's CGI there, what's not. And a little bit of the backstory, the intro, I love. It's my favorite part where he has that little monologue, you know, my children from the very beginning, you know, and it kind of takes you there. And then I just think overall it's a great movie, and it's got a kick-ass soundtrack. It's got Slipknot, it's got Killswitch Engage. It's great.
Yeah, I loved it too, man. I really enjoyed the movie too. All right, Blake. Well, I hope you sell a bunch of books, because like I said, I can't wait to get up my copy. And, you know, they can just find you on social media and your website. But I'm sure if you just do a quick Google search of Blake Best, Nightmare on Elm Street, it'll pop up. So, but yeah, definitely, man. Well, Blake, dude, thank you so much for coming on the Abracadam podcast, dude. This was a blast.
Thank you for having me.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode of the Abracadam podcast with horror author Blake Best. Blake is a super cool guy. Definitely check him out on his social media, Blake Best. He's on Facebook. Definitely. And pick up that book. Pick up both those books. If you were a fan in the 80s of the Nightmare on Elm Street films, like I was growing up, The Razor's Edge book is something that I can't wait to get, because I'm going to geek out, because it's a prequel
to the movies. So if you're a true fan, you definitely have to get that book. So be sure to pick that book up by Blake Best, Razor's Edge. Also, if you have not done so yet, please subscribe and follow to the Abracadam Podcast on wherever it is you listen to your podcasts. Definitely be sure to do that for me and leave a review. If you get a chance, give me a shout out review. I would love some good, honest feedback. Would love to hear from you guys. And like always, Abracadamits, thank you for listening.
It's awesome. Please stop drinking vodka at my kid's birthday party! Then you got a freaking miracle. There you go.